From Buffalo Wild Wings, this is the Jeff Fisher Show, brought to you by Super Park and Bud Light.
Welcome back to the Jeff Fisher Show here at Buffalo Wild Wings. I wonder if there's any way, Jeff, as we welcome in the Rams head coach, wait, to quantify exactly how many times Steven has seen 8 and 9 boxes, and this precedes you, but you have to have a great appreciation for that club he joined yesterday.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no doubt. I mean, I was privileged for me just to be there to see it happen. That's a tremendous accomplishment. I got to see it one other time with Eddie, and that's hard to do now. You know, you're talking about durability week in and week out, and, you know, through the ups and downs, and like you say, 8-man front, 9-man front, running over people. I mean, that's a career's work right there.
Yeah, he's not a glider. He's not a guy. This is a guy that from the moment he stepped into the league was putting his body through the rigors. I think really, Jeff, he's got it. I think the next milestone, if he gets to 1,000 yards, and he's got 91 yards to go in 2 games, that'll be 8 consecutive. He'd be just the 6th guy in the history. You talk about durability, show how tough it is. Only 6 men in the history of the game have done. Think how many great running backs.
Oh, yeah.
Not even Eddie George did.
Yeah,
that.
No, I know. I mean,
an injury throws you off?
It does. Year after year after year, he's just done, you know, literally the impossible. And that's what's so impressive with his body of work.
Do you think the toughest guy on a football team is usually the running back because of what he goes through? Just the punishment?
I'd say the one of the most difficult positions to play over a length of time is the running back's position just because of the pounding. Yeah, I mean, and I said this earlier, you know, backs naturally get old. And what you look for as they get up there in years, you look to see if they're getting tackled or they're getting hit. Okay? Jack is still getting tackled.
Getting hit, like depleted? Just getting smashed?
Or he's going to get tackled rather than taking hits. Ah. Not be able to make somebody miss or deliver the blow yourself. Deliver the blow yourself or make somebody miss and make them tackle you rather than becoming a target out there where you're getting hit.
All right, well, Steven had a great accomplishment. Look, Adrian Peterson had a great game yesterday. He is everything he's billed to be and more, 212 yards yesterday. You had a chance to review the film today. What are your general thoughts about the way your team performed yesterday?
You know, first I'll talk about our defense against the run. You know, his first 8 carries, I think he had, 4 yards or 10 yards, something
8
like
yards,
that.
I 8 think,
yards, yeah. And he had 5 where he lost yards. But the mark of a good back is they just keep going, they keep going. That's what he did. Now, we put our defense in probably a bad front on the long one. The second one, we had two unblocked defenders that couldn't make the tackle. It couldn't adjust the angle to him that we talked about all week. His speed is such that you have to flatten out. You cannot take the same angle that you take to every back. And to give you an example of what kind of back he is, I think you look and see what happened at the end of the game yesterday when he was out and Gearhart is in. Toby Gearhart is a good running back. And he was, you know, you saw what we did to him. Mm-hmm. So that shows you the difference between, you know, a back like Peterson and just another good running back and what he can do.
Well, you've been on the other side of it. You had Chris Johnson, you had Eddie, when Eddie was young and still had all his juice there. What does it do to the other team when your running back just hits one, a big run on you? What does that do to the other football team?
Well, it's really no different than a big completion for a touchdown. Same thing. It's just, you know, it's points and it's quick. You know, you're going to give up points. Your preference is not to. Sometimes you do. But your preference is to make them drive the football. And here in these instances, we got no opportunity to hold them to a field goal, you know, on the first one. I mean, it's 7 points on the board that fast.
You mentioned the front, being in the front, it was a first down play. If I recall, they ran the ball a lot. I mean, they threw the ball on play action on first down a lot in the first quarter. They came out on first down with a plan to go play action, did they not?
They do. You know, most teams, most coordinators, play callers on offense will have their first 12 or their first 15 plays. And, you know, you can go back over a length of the season or a period in which you're breaking them down, and you'll know that they're going to want to. There'll be two screens in the first 15. There'll be two play action passes. There'll be this, and that's what they did. They just scripted that and said, figured that we would be probably a little more run oriented, and so utilize some play action pass, and that's what they did. It wasn't anything really creative. Things we worked on in practice that we didn't get done in the game, which is a little disappointing.
A big second half rally again. We know your team doesn't quit. Slow first quarter. You haven't put up many points in the first quarter this year. What's your feeling on that? Why is that?
Well,
how do you get over that?
Both our first two drives in the first quarter ended at 3rd and 18 and 3rd and 20, sack and a holding penalty. I mean, that's hard to keep drives alive there. So the first quarter, I mean, we get the ball back at the end of the first quarter. Carried into the second quarter, and with 12 and a half minutes left, we put the ball in the end zone, and now we're 7-7. And then in the next 4 minutes, we end up down 27-7, or 24-7 in the field goal. So that's where it fell apart. And you know, that's so, you know, you can say whatever you want to say about the second half. We allowed them to play to their strengths, and their strengths are one, run the football, and two, rush the passer. Because we created problems for ourselves by fumbling in the center exchange, an interception return for a touchdown, and then the long run. So all of a sudden, bang, they're ahead, and then now the thing changes. We talked last week about the best way to defend Adrian Peterson is to keep Sam Bradford under center. That didn't happen yesterday when you turn the ball over to him like that.
That'd be frustrating. I'm sorry.
Well, as you said, there's another exchange, a six-point swing late in the first half. When Greg missed the field goal, and again, it has to be noticed, 57 or 58, and then they're in field goal range, their guy gets it. That six-point swing we were talking about late, as you guys were coming back, was big at that point. Greg started off making all the first 15 he attempted this year. I think he's missed 7 of his last 13. Are you worried at all about that he's hit a wall or what's going on with
him? I can't be too concerned about him missing a 57-yard field goal. Okay,
right.
Now, that was my choice. We were 4th and a mile.
Right.
So the odds of converting the fourth down are not good. We were in range, so we needed points at that point. So, but, you know, you go prior to the field goal attempt, we have two false starts on offense on a two-minute drive. You go into a two-minute drive and you have a penalty or you get sacked, you're basically not going to be successful in the two-minute drive. Penalties and sacks are really hard to overcome. And so we have two false starts, and we end up having to attempt a 57-yard field goal. So can't necessarily blame Greg on that. I'm going to blame the team, okay, because it's everything's connected. But
right.
You're right, there's a six-point swing there. So and then we come back second half, and it takes us a while to get going, and we speed things up. And, you know, Sam has success, which he should, against a defense that is not trying to give up touchdowns. And not that they were prevent, but I thought we did a good job attacking it for the most part. He made some really tight throws and some tight windows. And so there's positive to take away from this thing. Now, you know, as I told him today, we can put that 24-hour rule in effect and put this thing behind us. And then you got choice. You can either walk out the door feeling like you just got beat by the Minnesota Vikings, and or you can walk out the door, okay, realizing that we've won 3 out of the last 4 and we're going to go win another one. There's a difference. And so that's our mindset. Hey, we've won 3 out of the last 4. Let's go out and have an opportunity to go win another one.
Wow, I changed my outlook just real quick. Well, it's hard, I mean, because it's still fresh, you know. I mean, if I was listening to you say that in the team meeting, I mean, that would open up my mind, just like you did now, but it still stings a little bit.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Yeah.
But it does, but it's, you know, what, and the reason it stings is because it was, you know, it was us doing it to us.
Yeah.
You know, somebody said, oh, gosh, too bad you didn't get that bounce, and the ball comes out, it's a fumble, it rolls over and rolls out of bounds. I mean, I thought about kicking it back in and keeping it for a play, but, you know, that just happens sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and that same play happened against Miami, same thing. And then, you know, we come back the very next play, and we got a chance for a turnover.
Right.
And tough play for True, but he can make that catch. He can make that play, and we didn't, and then so they get a field goal.
Two things. Is there one penalty as a head coach, just a general head coaching question, is there one penalty that your team commits that you hate more than others?
Yeah, we've done it three times, and whether they're accurate in calling them remains to be seen. I think two of the three you could justify. But our three longest returns this year have all been called back. You know, the kickoff return against the Jets and Danny's near touchdown against the 49ers, and then this good return here, all been called back because of, you know, because of something.
Wow.
And that those are backbreakers. And you know what? You got a core group of special teams players that are young,
right,
that are busting their butt and trying to do their jobs. And, you know, that's what it's a growing pain thing. I've been through that before. It's a growing pain thing with young players playing special teams.
We'll step aside when we come back. Jeff Fisher will take your phone calls. This is the Jeff Fisher Show, brought to you by Super Park and Buffalo Wild Wings on 101 ESPN and the St. Louis Rams Radio Network.
Hey, who's that?
Oh, that's Rob.
When I lived in this apartment, the 49ers won the Super Bowl. I used to watch every game from this exact spot. This exact spot. I didn't know what else to do. This is my lucky seat, man. The team needs me, man.
Bud Light, for the fans who do whatever it takes.
First and 10 to give us to Peterson, off left tackle, bounces to the outside, chased by Jenkins, dropped in the backfield. Another play for a loss. Great reaction and speed to the ball by Janoris Jenkins. And Peterson is down inside the 20 at the 18 for a loss of 3.
That's one of the best plays he's made all year.
Well, would you follow up with that? Would you
yes.
call one of the best plays 21's made?
You know, I'll start off by saying this. Walter Payton set the single-game rushing record, probably told you guys this, at Minnesota, 78, 79, somewhere back there, 77. Defensive coordinator, by the way, was Buddy Ryan for the Minnesota Vikings. He set the single-game rushing record with 104 temperature.
What?
I did. Yes, he did.
Wow. He ran for 275 that day.
Yeah. We did not think Jenks was going to answer the bell yesterday morning. He was so sick the last 3 days. Sent him home on Friday, Thursday actually. Couldn't. He had a virus, and didn't sleep. His fever broke. You know how that goes.
Wow.
He hasn't eaten in 3 days, and comes out and plays his best game of the year.
And that was his best.
Really,
game.
Really proud of him. Oh yeah, yeah. The way he played. I mean, and he, you know, IVs in the morning. You know how that goes. You got to get the fluids. You haven't had anything to eat. He goes out there and has his best game. So, very, very proud of that young man.
Is that a Courtland Finnegan influence? Because they play the same aggressive game.
Yeah. Not well. It's, of course, a good influence on him, but that's how Jenks was. That's why we drafted him. That's the way he plays. Yeah, he's talented.
Ready for some phone calls?
Yep.
Let's go to Imperial and welcome in Stefan. Good evening, Stefan.
Hey, guys. What's up, DeMarco Ford, Coach Fisher? DeMarco, I saw you yesterday at the game.
Oh, hey, man.
Gonna call us.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, man. Thanks for the autograph.
No worries.
Yeah, I was just calling to make a statement, though. Like, I'm going to just take this season personally as a should-have season because we should have beat the Lions. We should have beat San Francisco the first time around. And we should have beat the Dolphins. And we should have made the playoffs. But that's all behind us. I'm looking forward to next season because under the great – you know, coaching staff and Jeff Fisher, I believe we can make the playoffs and, you know, just make a turnaround. Thanks.
All right.
Appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefan. Let's head to Texas and welcome in Judah. Judah, you're on with Jeff Fisher. Good evening.
Hey, Alfie. How you going? I was at the game yesterday, actually, and I really enjoyed it. My first Rams game ever. And I don't know. I could talk forever, but first off, I want to ask you, what's your position towards addressing our O-line issues in the offseason? I mean, I can think of a few names like Ryan Clady and Chase Wormack in free agency and draft that we could get, but that also is going to be a lot of cap room. And also, I heard that Shoddy earlier could be a head coach candidate this offseason, and I just want to know how you would handle giving Sam his fourth offensive coordinator in 4 years if that does happen. Thanks.
Well, we'll have to see what happens, but I would not change the system. That's the big deal. Is the system stay in place? The playbook would not change. So I think as a head coach, you have that responsibility to make sure that that doesn't happen. And basically, we kind of got through it. I went through it in down south with several different offensive coordinators, and we tried to make sure that the system stayed intact so that, in particular, so that Steve, you know, could handle it, and did. He didn't have any problem with it. So.
And Shadi, head coaching candidate? I guess it's inevitable at some point.
Oh, yeah. I believe he's ready now. But that you got to find the right place, right time. Timing's everything. But he's very, very talented.
And, you've been through this before. You don't want to lose coaches, but you also want to hire guys that someone will covet.
That's right, and you do, and because that means they're qualified. And so, I've had two of my assistants gone on to become head coaches over years, and so, but one who replaced the first one ended up being a head coach. So it's reality in the National Football League. It's going to be, as we all know, here in a couple of weeks, there's going to be some change, because change is inevitable in the league, and we'll just see what happens.
Now, when you were coaching, before you became a head coach, did you have coaches that encouraged you, that pushed you along, that helped you become a head coach? Was Buddy Ryan one of those guys?
No, he was not. No, Buddy wasn't. I left when Buddy was let go in Philadelphia. I left and came 91 here to the Rams. And then 2 years with the Niners. In particular, I went to the Niners just to learn under that organization, because at that point they were the marquee organization in football.
So Bill Walsh, George Seifert, those influences on you.
Yeah, I was there with Coach Seifert.
Let's go to Edwardsville, cross the river, and welcome in Brian to the Jeff Fisher Show. Good evening, Brian.
Hey, Jeff. I'm certainly glad you're in town here. Thanks for being here. I just got a couple of questions. I was looking back at the Buffalo game, and I was noticing that those guys were like playing a lot of man-to-man, which was basically taking the pass game away from Sam. And so I'm wondering, why don't we play a little bit more man-to-man and maybe get five guys, in the box, and keep those guys from having an opportunity to get out? Because the general consensus was that Ponder really wasn't a very good passer. And so if you got man-to-man and you can't get those guys out, to get first downs, then it seemed like an obvious strategy, but I didn't really see you using it too much. So I'm just kind of curious game plan and what your thing was.
Let me be the devil's advocate here, okay? So we're going to – did you just hear our great announcers on the highlight prior to us coming back on the air? What was that? That was Janoris Jenkins making a tackle for a loss, right? Okay, the reason he made a tackle for a loss because he was playing with the vision and in the run front, and he was playing zone. If you lock up your guys man-to-man on their receivers and their tight ends, and they're running down the field, they're worried about their covers, they can't use them as effectively in the run front. So that's why we can play man, but many people play man-to-man defense against them. Now, we saw man-to-man, I think the caller is referring to, out from the Buffalo Bills defense. We did. It took us a while. It took us to, the first drive of the third quarter and the end of the game to get things going. We didn't see much man-to-man yesterday. And,
right.
It's just much easier to attack the zone, and our guys have a good feel for zone. We spread them out. But can't play a lot of man-to-man when you're facing a really good back.
Moving forward, if you talk about – I don't exclude anybody. If you talk about Cortland and Janoris as your starters, and you've got True, you got Bradley Fletcher, is this as good a group of two-way corners – physical corners, run support corners, in addition to cover, that you've had?
Four deep,
close
it is.
To it?
Yeah, four deep it is. It reminds me of, now we were a little bit different defensively from scheme-wise, but way back in 99, when two teams met in the Super Bowl, it was said that the top two teams in the league that year with depth at the cornerback spot were the two teams that met in the Super Bowl. And us.
Wow.
You had tremendous depth.
We did,
as we did. I mean, you had Todd and Dexter. Who else?
Dre Bly was there. Yeah, Tajay Allen was there. Yeah. We did have a lot of depth coming in. Good safety depth,
similar,
too.
Similar, though. Dre was either a rookie or first year.
Yeah.
This is kind of similar to the situation you've got.
Got to have depth at that spot. Look around the league and what's happened. Did you expect to see Arizona do that to Detroit?
No.
Okay.
No. Good depth at corner.
No depth at corner. Yeah, they're gone. they lost their secondary. So you got to have depth there.
Can you take an excellent athlete in a cover corner and make him a run support guy? Can you influence him in that way? Rather, maybe that's a better way. Or do you have to see it early on to know that it's going to be there?
Well, you like to see those traits in college. You know, you like to see him tackle in college, and that's what we Jenks tackled and True tackled. I mean, they did more than tackle. I mean, they were physical corners, and so you know, and I'm really pleasantly surprised, having not known much about Fletch, that the manner in which he plays from a physical standpoint on special teams. I mean, he's bringing it, and so we got a group that will, you know, will bring it, and that's good.
And you know, what's impressive about Fletch is he's on a rebuilt knee twice here.
I know.
Two serious knee surgeries. Yeah. The one thing we've learned about the kid early on, even as a rookie, he was tough, but he comes back quickly. His body heals pretty
quickly. Never complains either.
No.
Yeah. No, absolutely not.
Hey, I got a question about usage. This came up on the radio today, and I was talking to Steve about it, and we missed it. That Steven Jackson should have been run more. It just doesn't hold up if you look at the stats.
Well, the second half is nonsensical because we understand the situation. I'm assuming I'm going to give somebody the benefit of the doubt who tried to think through this that they're talking about the first half.
Yeah, I people have our entitled their opinions. We're just trying to get things going, you know. And we handed off. We opened the game with a screen, and we had picked up a first down. And then, you know, you change things up. You throw on first down, or you throw on, you know, you run on first down. You come back. You change up what you're doing on first down, just to try to stay ahead of you know, your opponent. And then got behind. And again, you don't convert third downs. You just don't get an opportunity to turn and hand it to him.
You know?
And that's the issue. So he's in the game, but we may not hand it to him at that time. So
we saw a great catch by Brian Quick in the corner of the end zone. But we see that in practice. I do. I know you see it more than I do, but we see it two or three times a week in our time at practice. So that was in his repertoire. You guys knew that when you scouted him from Appalachian State. That was not an easy catch.
No,
Sam put it in the spot where only he could come down with it.
That's right. He went up a little bit too early, though.
He did.
He went up and caught it coming down. Yeah.
Well, so, work on it. He can work on that.
First thing I said to Sam, I said, great throw, but I think he jumped the gun. Sam goes, yeah, he did. I felt like he was up in the air before I threw it. You know. So,
but
it's a great catch. Great catch, concentration, gets the foot down, gets the elbow down. And what that does is, you know, from a defensive standpoint, it forces you to sometimes may take a safety over there to help. And as soon as you take a safety over there, that single receiver side, you're lightening yourself in the run game or on the other side. So with frequency of these type of plays out of him, better off will be in the plus territory.
You converted another two-point conversion. That's now. You've set the team record.
You guys,
this is a Rams record.
All over this, huh?
Oh, Doc Weiner.
It's great, man. I mean, you know,
how
it's
that?
Awesome.
Five of six.
Five of six. Now, that five represent. That's a new team record for the Rams.
Yeah, during the season.
I mean, it's Jeff, it's great.
And it has asterisk because one of them was from the 7-yard line.
Correct.
Yeah.
So they continue to have great success.
Is there a difference for two-point plays, like offensive philosophy or – you know what I mean? It seems like if you're trying to get a five-yard play, you can call almost anything.
I think it depends. What you know, offensive coaches and coaching staffs will say, okay, here's our 3 2-point plays this week, or two. I don't know. I've known anybody that's had three, but because you don't think you're going to need them all. But so, okay, here's our 2 2-point plays going in. We'll practice them and go. Oftentimes, they're part of your plus territory package, and then oftentimes they're just designed to try to get you two. You know, they're a little different because it's a dead play. You know, it's not like college where, you know, if the ball's turned over or something like that, it goes the other, you score and all that kind of stuff. It's a dead play. The other thing that happens defensively is, you know, you're coaching your defense players when the opponent is approaching it, attempting a two-point play. You know, if it's close, I mean, don't let them catch it. All right, meaning intentional pass interference.
Right.
Yeah. Don't let him catch it.
Right.
Okay. Oh, I understood.
So now you're going to come down from the 2-yard line to the 1-yard line. And now, as I mentioned, okay, now they're on their second 2-point play, or maybe they only had one in the game, and now what are they going to call?
Right.
So, different ways of approaching.
Well, it's been great. 5 of 6 of the Rams in 2-point conversions.
Do you want me to intentionally just go for one over the next couple of weeks?
Sure. If you feel good about it.
Just keep it going.
Because now, Jeff, every successful 2-point conversion sets a new record.
That's right.
All right. Okay. 314-969-0101 or 618-399-0101 or hit us up on Twitter at Rams Radio. This is the Jeff Fisher Show brought to you by Super Park and Buffalo Wild Wings on 101 ESPN and the St. Louis Rams Radio Network.
Hey. Who's that?
Oh, that's Rob.
When I lived in this apartment, the 49ers won the Super Bowl. I used to watch every game from this exact spot. This exact spot. I didn't know what else to do. This is my lucky seat, man. The team needs me, man.
Bud Light, for the fans who do whatever it takes.
Play clock at 3. At 2, they get it off. Sam throws the fade right side for Blick, who makes the catch. What a catch by the rookie from Appalachian State. He's in the end zone for a 4-yard touchdown. Oh, my goodness. What a catch.
And he messed that up.
Well,
he caught it, but
he all's well that ends well. Made it a little easier on himself, that's all.
He wanted to make it more spectacular, yeah. More likely to get on ESPN. Great catch there by Brian Quick in yesterday's game. Let's head back to the phone lines and welcome in Jim from Overland. Jim, you're on with the Rams head coach, Jeff Fisher.
Hi, Savvy and DeMarco. Enjoy your guys' work every game,
thank
without
you,
a doubt. Coach, been a season ticket holder since the Rams have been in and since 69 with the Cardinals with my father. And, again, disappointing season. A few more victories in the last few years, obviously. We're looking for something to come back on next year with the pay our money, and we heard it. You said you got something good going in that locker room. We're not going to change it. And hearing something like that, something positive from the head coach, makes all the difference in the world. So we'll see you next year. We sit right across in nosebleeds, right across from Seve and DeMarco Farr on the other side of the stadium. We'll be there. And St. Louis fans, don't leave at halftime, will you please? And thanks, Coach.
Thank you. We appreciate your support. Yeah, what you don't realize is what goes on around there during the week, and it really is. It's a good locker room. It's an outstanding locker room. They care about each other. They're unselfish, and when you get that established, you got a chance to turn things around quickly.
Jim sounded old school. I hope he's not looking in the booth with the binoculars.
That's all right. It's nothing. I mean, it's just me and you up and Haas and Doty back
okay.
There.
I just wouldn't.
What do you mean I'm okay?
I wouldn't want anything that you do to get on.
We're okay.
Social media sites.
Play back the San Francisco highlight. Okay. Yeah.
They got the fumble again. All right. Let's go to Sacramento. Speaking of nearby San Francisco, Sacramento. Chris joins us from California. Chris, you're on with the Rams head coach.
Hey, guys, I really want to appreciate the time to be on here, Coach. I'm all on board. I'm a big fan. Been a Rams fan since 78. I love what you're doing. It takes time. Everybody, it takes time. DeMarco, you know, you've been a part of a team. You got to build it and grow it, and it'll eventually come back up. Got two questions for you, Coach. Number one, I'm disappointed in Robert Quinn. Would like to see him be an all-around better player, and maybe his third year he will be. What I mean by that is really setting that edge on the run, maybe implementing a spin move and a bull rush. I mean, I know you just can't teach somebody that in one day, but I'd like you to comment on his, you know, evolution or progression as a defensive end in the NFL. And my last question is, Coach, I would love to see you coach the Senior Bowl. I'm really big on the draft and things like that. I know this team has the picks. I'd love to see you get some hands-on with those guys. Can you comment on that and how it would help?
Came out well before warm-ups yesterday, and their middle, their outside linebacker, Greenway, comes up and says hello. We coached him in the Senior Bowl. It's been 6 years now, something like that.
Yeah,
the relationships that you establish, and you really do, as caller says, you get inside information that you don't ordinarily get, because you get to put them in a classroom and you get to teach them A, and then you want to make sure that they can take that what you taught them out the field and see how they process and learn. So it's a great experience. But that remains to be seen. That'll be left up to the league.
Your thoughts on Robert Quinn's development?
I think he's coming on. You know, he's really coming on. He's certainly much more productive this year than he was last year. I think his his play in the run front is better than the caller alluded to. I think he's been a good edge setter for us there. And you know, I mean, obviously he can run. You see, I don't like seeing the highlight. When I've seen it today, I've watched my guy and not their guy.
I watched 94 run and step for step, that guy can run. Adrian Peterson.
Right behind him. Yeah.
Speaking of good and run support, guy you brought from Nashville, William Hayes. Seems like he's playing better and better in recent weeks, showing up, really, really playing well in the
game. He plays well on the move, you know, and he's stout too. I mean, he can shock shed, things like that, but he plays well on the move. And he's instinctive, and yeah, he got us off to a good start.
Does anything change for you in the next 2 weeks now that, you know, what happened and the whole in the hunt thing? You don't talk about that.
No.
Anything change for you?
No, it doesn't. I mean, we take the same approach. I think we need to be mindful of the players. We've just week after week, it's been just physical. So, you know, we need to make sure that they're taking care of their bodies so they can finish up strong. I'm not gonna just all of a sudden make roster moves and play people that haven't played, because most everybody's played. All the young guys have played. So, you know, we will have to replace Harvey, which is, you know, not going to be easy, yeah. But we've got Chris Williams who can play the position. Shelly Smith can play, so you know we'll have one or maybe both of them in there doing that. We'll just wait and see how it goes. But you know, it's too bad. Harvey really had a solid year. You know, he is. He's downfield, mean, and mauling and pulling and so. But you know, it's a 3 to 4 month deal. He'll be back ready for the offseason.
Tore his biceps.
Tore bicep tendon. Yeah.
Okay. Bicep tendon. And you know, this injury aside, He's lined up week after week for 2 years here. And I was talking to Paul Boudreau this week. He doesn't miss practice reps either.
No. He does not like missing practice.
Yeah.
Nickname was the animal. Coach.
Sorry?
Nickname was the animal.
Harvey's a little out there.
Describe the real Harvey Dahl personality for us.
He's quiet. And, you know, he likes contact. he plays guard like he's a defensive player.
Like his hair's on fire.
Yeah. Yeah, he likes the word attack. Yeah.
Loves the run
and
game.
Finish. Yes, he loves
the You run love game. Guys like that.
Yes.
let's welcome in Dino from St. Louis. Good evening, Dino. We lost Dino. We'll go to Dale, who's in Sedalia. Hi, Dale. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much, guys. Coach, I want to tell you that I really appreciate you having the coach's show again. Therefore, it was a couple, 3 years we didn't have it. And it's always enjoyable for us fans to be able to call in. And I know some of our questions may be a little bit, you know, simple to understand, you know, for what they are. But we really appreciate the opportunity. And I hope I'm speaking for everybody on that. My wife and I drove 400 miles round trip to the San Francisco game. And we were sitting in the San Francisco section, or at least there was up to 49er fans there. And I said, we've been to 7 games since 95 and never lost a game. And here it was like 2 minutes to go and it was 10-2 and we come back and won. So we really had a blast. And I just want to tell you thank you.
Well, thank you. Hold on the air. Make sure you get his number. Okay. You're 7-0. You need to start coming to more games.
Yeah. We'll go pick him up in Sedalia.
And I am not superstitious, so. Yeah.
Okay. We'll go pick him up. I think it's about a 2.5-hour drive to Sedalia, 3 hours. All no right. problem, right?
No problem.
We'll get him in here.
Okay.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll look ahead to the Buccaneers game coming up in Tampa on Sunday. This is the Jeff Fisher Show brought to you by Super Park and by Buffalo Wild Wings on 101 ESPN of the St. Louis Rams radio network.
Hey. Who's that?
Oh, that's Rob.
When I lived in this apartment, the 49ers won the Super Bowl. I used to watch every game from this exact spot. This exact spot. I didn't know what else to do. This is my lucky seat, man. The team needs me, man.
Bud Light, for the fans who do whatever it takes.
All right, welcome back. Rams will take on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers down in South Florida on Sunday. And, Jeff, when a team, first of all, the Buccaneers are a better football team than the score, anything would indicate what happened yesterday, Sunday. So would you approach your football team and say, look, this is an aberration? And do you have any trepidation going into play a team that lays an egg like it did Sunday?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, they turned it over 5 times through 4 interceptions and had – total of 5 turnovers, At New Orleans, you're not going to win, turn the ball over to them, to Drew Brees that many times. They are number one in the National Football League in rushing defense. And that's yards per game and average per attempt. So that's going to, you know, that's going to be a big challenge for us to find a way to run the football against them. They also have had injuries in the secondary, and the flip side of that is that they're not ranked as high as they would have liked to be in the passing defense. So, you know, we're going to have to be smart about what we do. And then, of course, their offense, you know, that rookie back, Mark Martin from Boise, we really like coming out in the draft. He's got off to a great start. Quarterback is hard to get down on the ground. He's an accurate thrower. So yeah, they had a rough go at it, but you know, knowing their head coach, he'll have them ready to play.
Yeah, they seem to have adopted a no nonsense following Greg Schiano's personality. They seem to be a hard edged football team.
They're a tough team now. Yeah, they're physical on defense, and you know they're going to run the football and try to push you around and do that kind of stuff. Perfect matchup for us.
I was going to say, is it who they have or just how they play to stop the run?
Well, they've got a good group of linebackers, but the, you know, McCoy and those guys up front are stout, you know, and they penetrate and yeah, they set edges well. So you know, we're going to have to find a way to run it.
This could be one of those games played in a phone booth again.
Yes,
it is will. That right?
Yes,
Jeff, we're looking forward to it. Thanks as always for your
Thanks
time.
Thanks so much.
And go get the Buccaneers.
Thanks so much.
That's head coach Jeff Fisher here at Buffalo Wild Wings. We've been happy to bring you the Jeff Fisher Show, brought to you by Super Park and by Buffalo Wild Wings. Thank you for attending, and thank you for listening here on 101 ESPN of the St. Louis Rams Radio Network.